This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In his speech at the 2004 Democratic National Convention, Barack Obama declared that there is no black America or white America, only the United States of America. His humble background as the son of a Kenyan goat herder and a white woman from Kansas, his strong work ethic, which took him all the way to Harvard Law School and beyond, looked to many like the American dream come true. Senator Obama's personal story and optimistic message resonated with millions of Americans and led him to launch a campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination last weekend in Springfield, Illinois. But while Senator Obama is often greeted like a rock star, many civil rights leaders and a lot of African-American voters are not yet part of the cheering section. The black political establishment openly questions Obama's political experience and his cultural background, whether in effect he is black enough or whether he can be described as an African-American at all. Recent opinion polls show that African-American voters prefer his rival, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, by a wide margin. If Barack Obama hopes to win the black vote, in other words, he'll have to earn it. Later on in the program, our weekly dose of the political junkie with NPR's other junkie, correspondent Mara Liasson. If you have questions about the debate over the debate on Iraq, Mitt Romney or Giuliani's bid for the Republican nomination, or other news, you can email them to us now. The address is talk@npr.org. But first, Barack Obama and the black vote. What is Barack Obama's racial and cultural identity, and does it matter? The number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. And joining us now are Clarence Page and Deborah Dickerson. Clarence Page is a Pulitzer Prize winner and syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune. He joins us here in Studio 3A in Washington. Deborah Dickerson is a columnist for Salaam.com, author of the book The End of Blackness. She joined us by phone from her home in Albany, New York, where she's buried under several feet of snow. Deborah, let me begin with you, and thanks for taking the time out from watching the blizzard to join us.
So glad to have something else to think about.
How different is the conversation about Obama in the mainstream press from what's going on within the black community?
Well, I'm not sure it's all that different. Well, we're not spending much time, I don't think, in the black community on whether or not he is considered black. And I've only heard people at the margins say things like, you know, we don't want these foreigners coming in, or he doesn't represent the experience. Black people are beyond that. That's sort of a conversation for white people. Is he black enough? I think black people, the vote is something that we take so seriously that we're talking about issues of electability. There's some politicians in Georgia who were recently taken to the woodshed for saying they weren't going to support Obama because everybody would lose. With a black man at the top of the ticket, all Democrats are going to lose. And they were forced to recant that. But I think black people, we don't take our vote for granted, and we're proud of Obama and think he's wonderful. But we're looking at who is going to do what we want done for this community. So he's going to have a harder row to hoe as anybody to win our vote.
Now you say that, but you also said in an article on Salaam.com that he's never been black for a living. He doesn't have the same cultural experience as a lot of African-American, not only in the black political establishment, but a lot of African-American voters.
Right. Well, when I said he was never been black for a living, what I meant was that that would hurt him in getting the support of the civil rights old guard. The fact black for a living, I mean, he never worked at the NAACP and never did civil rights work or never did sort of like Johnny Cochran criminal defense activist work. And so what I meant there was to say that's a reason why people like Reverend Jackson and Reverend Sharpton might feel like he's got a few hoops to jump through. I think they're wondering if he is a critique of their style of politics.
Mm-hmm. You also wrote, I didn't have the heart as to why you hadn't written this column before, or the stomach to point out the obvious, Obama isn't black.
Right, and that has been widely misunderstood, which goes to tell me my book was a couple years ahead of the curve. What I mean by that is not to critique Senator Obama or to critique blacks who did not come through the American experience of slavery. It's just to say that in this country, black means the people who came here as slaves who were oppressed by white people. And we have marginalized other voices. The black community has marginalized other voices from the black diaspora. You know, name a prominent West Indian who is West Indian first. You know, name a prominent Nigerian immigrant or Haitian immigrant. And I think that to lump us all into this one category and to force them, to require them to see the world in the same way that we do is, I think it's a form of bigotry. And I think the day is not far off when these people are going to make their voices known as members of those communities.
Let's bring Clarence Page into the conversation. And Clarence, it's not so snowy deep here in Washington, D.C., but it's plenty sloppy out there. We appreciate your struggling into here to studio.
Might as well be the way Washington handles snow.
Might as well be, but you're from Chicago. You know snow. Anyway,
thank you.
In a column you wrote in January, you said Barack Obama's candidacy will say more about Americans than about Obama himself. What did you mean by that?
Well, I was thinking back to how I made my political bones in this business of journalism during the Harold Washington campaign when he became Chicago's first black mayor. I'm seeing a lot of parallels because what started out as a conventional political movement, actually a protest movement, became a campaign, and then it became this big sensitivity session. Some people called it a low-level race war. It was quite remarkable. The whole country watched as black folks and white folks learned a lot of new things about each other, not all of them pleasant. And we're starting to see that happen now with the Obama campaign. I think in the long run, it's healthy. The question that you raise about black voters, in Chicago, let's point out, Obama being a Chicagoan, as people who saw his 60 Minutes profile know, he spent a lot of time out in the Roseland community as an advocate for poor folks against lead paint and public housing and
using
and other
that
issues.
Harvard law degree, yeah,
right, he could have gone to LaSalle Street. They would have our big financial street, our version of Wall Street. All those white shoe law firms would have loved him over there. First black president of the Harvard Law Review, but he went out to the projects instead, and he has a great record for public service. Bobby Rush, who he ran against for Congress, and Bobby Rush trounced him, has turned into a supporter. You've got a number of people there who do see him as representative of views in the black community without being a sellout, and at the same time, white voters like him without feeling like he's in the pocket of Jesse Jackson or other black activists. And I think that's what Obama has to show the rest of the country, mm-hmm. black and white.
And does that black political establishment and the Al Sharptons, the Jesse Jacksons, as well as the Congressional Black Caucus, do they see some element of challenge to their style of politics from Barack Obama?
Well, here's where I get to play my political pundit role, because for one thing, Jesse Jackson has said to me and everybody else that he loves Barack Obama, and I believe him. His son, Jesse Jackson Jr., a congressman, and his wife are good friends of Barack and Michelle Obama, have been for a long time. Al Sharpton's a different matter, but remember, Al Sharpton is a New Yorker. Al Sharpton has established a relationship with the Clintons over the years. So have other New York area Democratic black politicians. And so that element
and
comes
into
it. And
so as we heard, have some in South Carolina.
Absolutely. Across the country. Bill Clinton, remember, was our first black president, according to Toni Morrison. But a lot of folks would say, yeah, he certainly had that kind of rapport with the black community. And those alliances still continue. And look to our friend Rahm Emanuel, Congressman Rahm Emanuel of Chicago, who has been very close to the Clintons for years, was right there in the White House staff, and now has been helping Barack Obama, as he says, he's going to hide under his desk until the primaries are over. I mean, which way does he go?
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. Our guests are Clarence Page, the syndicated columnist with the Chicago Tribune, and Deborah Dickinson, who writes for Salon.com. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Courtney. And Courtney's calling us from Cleveland.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
I just wanted to know, where did this question even start from? I mean, I keep hearing this, and I kind of just wonder, where did this come from? And on one level, we're hearing, wow, he's going to be this, he's going to be that, and then all of a sudden, is he black and, black enough for the black community? I just kind of wonder, does anyone know where this notion has come from? Because I haven't heard anyone saying that.
Deborah Dickinson, where did this idea come from, do you think?
Well, I don't know that it isn't a question. I think this is a question that was bound to come up in this particular circumstance when you have somebody who is credibly in position to become president of the United States And it wasn't until somebody who was multiracial with a component of African in him that this question was going to come to the fore. So I would say the question arose naturally. I agree with Mr. Page, whose work I've admired for a long time, by the way.
And yours too, Deborah.
Thank you.
Excellent
this
book.
This conversation is healthy. And in the reaction to some of the things I'm getting from black people, there's a lot of fear, and the caller is sort of mirroring that. There's a fear to even have this discussion. And I don't know what the fear is about. Talk isn't going to hurt us. And so much of this conversation about race is submerged. It goes on in the subtext. And even if I were to say, which I've never said, and I don't think that Barack Obama isn't black enough, why is that even a frightening conversation? The only way we can deal with these issues is by confronting them, and the ones that stand up to the light of day do, and the ones that don't, don't.
And Clarence Page, might it also not have arisen when those first opinion polls came out and people noticed that Senator Clinton's support among black voters, way ahead of the political campaign, but a year out, but nevertheless, that her support among black voters is a lot stronger than Barack Obama's.
Well, that's right, and so is her support among white voters, white Democratic voters, let's remember. No, Neil, let's be honest, it was the media that raised this question, because it's a great little headline. Is Barack black enough? I mean, there were people I know who were champing at the bit for that, raise that question, because I got called by them to be interviewed, and so did about every other black pundit I know. It's a convenient question, but it's misleading because, and again, this goes back to the point I raised in my earlier column about the education that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Black folks and white folks are asking themselves, well, what is black now? You know, I mean, if one thing, is it so unusual for Barack Obama to be the son of a non-American African? Colin Powell came from a family of Jamaican immigrants. Shirley Chisholm was West Indian. You go back, Stokely Carmichael, the father of the Black Power movement, Marcus Garvey. We could go on and on. It's not new to have African Americans who have roots in the West Indies or in Africa. So, I mean, that's just the beginning of the conversation to me.
Okay, Courtney, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. And we're going to continue after we take a short break. We're talking with Clarence Page and Deborah Dickerson about Barack Obama and his appeal or lack of it to black voters. And we're taking your calls at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing Barack Obama and the uneasy reaction among some African Americans to his campaign for president. You can read more analysis of this candidacy at our website at npr.org. Our guests are Clarence Page, nationally syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and Deborah Dickerson, a columnist for Salon.com, author of the book The End of Blackness. As always, we invite your participation. Does Barack Obama's cultural or racial identity matter to you? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Here's an email we got from Melba in Charlotte, North Carolina. Poor Barack can't win for losing. As an African-American, I know all too well what's going on. At first, Black said he didn't have a chance because whites wouldn't vote for him. Now that he enjoys widespread support among whites, blacks are suddenly suspicious of him. What are we missing, they ask. If white people like him this much, he must not really be one of us. Bill Cosby endured the same criticism from blacks when he had a number one rated network show. Deborah Dickerson points out that he's not a descendant of slaves and therefore not one of us. It's ridiculous. What's next? Will we divide ourselves into descendants of house slaves and field hands? Obama correctly pointed out cabbies don't care where his parents were born before decided to pass him up. Deborah Dickerson, get a response to that?
Sure. You know, I guess I'm going to say this till my throat gets hoarse. What I'm rejecting is a notion of blackness, that the only thing that's important about us is that we're the people who are oppressed by white people. And I think, and every critique that I hear mentions the cabbie who won't pick you up and how the police is all the same points that I made in my original article. The issue is seeing ourselves through this incredibly thin prism on reality, and it seems to me that at some point, people descended from Africa, from the American slavery story and not, need to find ways to see ourselves that are not so narrow.
Mm-hmm. And Clarence Page, let me ask you, is this in part a generational difference? Because you also see young African-American politicians, Cory Booker, for example, mm-hmm. mayor of Newark, New Jersey, born during or after the Civil Rights era, who view racial politics differently than Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton might.
Well, that's a great other show. I know Cory Booker, and anybody who does know him and the race he had, he was accused of not being black enough, but that was that's the way black pals play the race card against each other. That was a classic example of it there in Newark when he ran against former Mayor Sharp James. This is an interesting question. The thing about Barack is that we must take into account, as he said himself on several occasions, African-American voters are more sophisticated than to say simply that, well, he wasn't born here, therefore he's not black enough, or his family wasn't descended from slavery, so he's not black enough. It's more than that. Has he paid his dues? As I mentioned earlier, in Chicago, yeah, he paid his dues, and he built up the local support there, and he's got to do that nationally like any candidate. But, Neil, let's compare Barack Obama and black folks to Joe Lieberman and Jewish Americans, who many of whom told me when he was running, oh, America's not ready to elect a Jew. I know Catholic families who, back when JFK was running, said America's not ready to elect a Catholic. I know a number of women friends right now who say, I don't think America's ready to elect a woman. You're always going to hear that kind of a reluctance. And what does that mean in terms of black voters? Well, many black voters are asking now of Barack, as they asked in Chicago of Harold Washington, will my vote count if I vote for this person? Will my vote be wasted or will it count? And Barack has to show he's viable. I think he's showing that because of the fact that he is getting such strong support right now among white voters in the polls.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Mary. Mary's with us from New Haven, Connecticut.
Hello, am I on the air?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, sorry. What I was going to say is that this is a recurrent theme of conversation among people of color. And you've seen it, for example, in a lot of work that's been done in the Ivy League schools where there's been talk about a lot of the kids of color who are now at these top schools are children of immigrants. They're first and second generation black people from West Indian and African communities. And in some colleges, they have a term which they call JB. I think they use it at Yale for just black, meaning I'm just black American. And it doesn't mean you don't support somebody like Barack, or it doesn't mean he's not black enough, but it's part of our, at least within communities of color, our discussion of who gains acceptance within white society. When you see the numbers going up in admissions at colleges, are they black scrum who have come here, been here for 300 years, or black people who are first and second generation? When you see somebody who, like Barack Obama, and suddenly he's the first person who's deemed to be a almost acceptable or someone with a chance for really being president, he ends up being, just like all these kids in college, somebody who is not fully, first of all, he's biracial, right? You know, so he's half black and who's not even from traditionally from the United States. And I just don't see it as anything which is new. It's just something that the media has sort of picked up on, but that is, you know, something that we talk about, and I think we have to talk about it, and we ought to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Deborah Dickerson, I think that's some of the things that you have been discussing throughout this program.
Right. When I'm saying I'm not critiquing Barack, what I am critiquing is, and I noticed that I call him by his first name, so I definitely feel a kinship with him. But what I see, the critique I see here is a critique of white self-congratulation. White people are falling all over themselves, you know, to telling the world how much they love Barack. And if he had the same resume and he were sub-Saharan African and looked it, I don't think we'd be seeing this kind of love from white people. If he were native-born, descended from slaves, and had the same resume, he wouldn't be getting this kind of love from white people. So to get back to the last issue, I think that it's a bitter pill that black people and all people of African descent are going to have to swallow, is that it takes somebody like him. He's sort of like the political sin eater. And somebody like him has to be first. It has to be somebody who wasn't associated with slavery here, so white people don't have to feel guilty. He's all transcendent and new agey, so they don't worry that he's going to start rhyming like Jesse, or he's going to get all angry and start accusing them of things and talking about reparations and all that. He puts white people at ease. So insofar, the people I'm mad at here are white people, because it took somebody who was not a part of the slave experience to get white people to see black people in all their humanity.
Mary, thanks very much for the call. Back in the year 2000, Barack Obama, then an Illinois state senator, ran against incumbent Congressman Bobby Rush in the Democratic primary for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives and lost by a large percentage. Joining us to tell us more about that race and about now Senator Obama's race for the presidency is Congressman Bobby Rush. He joins us from a booth in the radio House Radio TV Gallery at the Capitol. And Congressman, nice to have you on the program today.
Well, thank you so much. It's good to be on the program.
So back in the year 2000, you were running against a guy who was born in Hawaii and raised at least in part in Indonesia, had a degree from Harvard Law School. And I guess it wasn't all that difficult for you there in Chicago to portray him as an outsider.
Well, I don't know whether or not that's particularly accurate. First of all, he was running against me. I was the incumbent, had been elected, I think, for three or four times during that prior to him running against me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his ambition kind of collided with my history and my involvement, my participation, not only in the civil rights movement, but my tenure here in the Congress. And I think that's what collided, and he lost as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. Did you, though, this is, of course, a heavily African-American district there in Chicago, and did you in part campaign that, well, he's not really one of us?
I would not say that. I mean, you know, there were some things that was spoken, some things not spoken. I think that Barack was viewed as an upstart, someone who had not paid any dues, someone who had not really been involved in the totality of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, you know, my politics came out of the civil rights movement. My involvement, you know, my community activism all resounded around the civil rights movement. And I was viewed as an authentic African-American leader who had, you know, put guts on the ground, and who had really done some things that won the respect of my community. I was not a media creation.
At the end of now 2 years as a United States Senator, and Senator Obama is now running for the presidency, has he paid those dues? Has he established that authenticity?
Well, I think he's gone a long way in terms of, this is a whole different situation. Running for Congress, you know, it's more retail politics. You know, people consider you very close to them. You run for the Senate, it's not the same thing. Running for president, certainly even far more removed. But I think that, you know, Barack does represent an aspect of hope. I certainly would like to see him win. I'm supporting him. However, I just know that in order for him to really capture the imagination and also an admiration and the support, the enthusiastic support of the broad cross section of the African American community, I think that he's got to really address some of the concerns. It's not so much about his profile that we're concerned about, it's about his policies and his programs, and to a certain extent, whether or not his politics are politics that will really reflect some of the deep-seated issues that continue to haunt the African-American community, to continue to stifle the African-American community. I think the African-American community, particularly in Illinois, very enthusiastic, will give him the benefit of the doubt on some things.
Mm-hmm.
But
not everything.
He's going to have to show that he would be more of a strategic ally, strategic supporter, more of an advocate for the deep-seated aspirations of blacks than Hillary Clinton, who has some years, a decade or more of years of really being someone that has demonstrated an ability to connect with the African-American community in some basic ways.
So as a supporter of Barack Obama, you would not be critical of African-Americans who supported either Senator Clinton or John Edwards' people, as you say, with a proven track record?
I'm not going to be supportive of anybody. I think that I'm not going to be critical of anybody who supports other candidates for whatever reason. I mean, there are some members of Congress who have told me, in fact, that they're not going to be with Barack, and that they're going to be with Hillary, or some said that they would be with John Edwards. You know, that's one of the marvels of this whole upcoming election. But I really believe that Barack's challenge is to excite, not to ignore the African-American community, not to take it for granted, but to use it as an opportunity to use this candidacy as an opportunity to address some real critical needs that have not been addressed in the body politic for a long period of time. And I think that if he does that, then he will be able to be successful not only in terms of the nomination, but I believe that he will have a meaningful relationship with the African-American community.
And if there was one thing that if he called you for advice and says, Congressman Rush, what should I do? What might you tell him?
Well, I tell him, you know, to get away from this false dichotomy of post civil rights leadership and the civil rights leadership. I mean, we can't afford to have that kind of dichotomy, and it really is a false dichotomy. The same issues that we were fighting for in the civil rights movement are present today, probably even more intense than they were back in those days. He's got to understand that that he's got to be angry at something. You know, he just can't be this this individual who is who loves everybody and everybody loves him. Mm-hmm. That's not going to get it. You know, he's going to have to understand, and he's going to have to demonstrate that he understands the rage that exists in the broad spectrum of the African American community. I mean, it's a basic rage that's prevalent and it's present there among the different stratas of the African American community. I mean, when I talk to very successful and rich business persons, entrepreneurs, they have the same kind of rage because they have faced the same kind of obstacles and discrimination, discriminatory activities by both individual at the level of individual racism and also institutional racism. When you're talking to hardworking, ordinary African Americans who are 9 to 5, they have rage and they have outrage really about some of the things that occur to them. And then you have, you know, certainly you have the poor community, those who are have really lost hope. You know, those issues have to be addressed. And so his appeal have to be an appeal to the heart and soul of the African-American community. And I just think that I would tell him, you know, don't fall victim to this attempt to divide us in, based on our on some individual privileges that some may enjoy. Mm-hmm. You know, in essence, the quintessential issues of the African-American community are still here, still profound, still present, and still need to be addressed.
Congressman Rush, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it. Bobby Rush, a Democrat from Illinois, he joined us today from a booth at the House Radio TV Gallery at the Capitol. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Still with us are Clarence Page and Deborah Dickerson. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Sir. Sir is with us from Las Vegas.
Yes, I am calling to remind everybody also too, we don't just judge candidates by the color of their skin. It's not about that, because when you look at it, we have a Supreme Court justice whose skin is just as black as any black man that ever lived in America, and his policies doesn't reflect anything that concerns the middle class or the downtrodden. The same thing with our Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice. It's the same thing. So it's not about color. It's about the man's policy. After looking at the summit with Tavis Smiley this past weekend, that was one of the main things that was talked about on that stage, and that was the hell with someone's color. Let's talk about their policies. Will their policies benefit the middle class and the downtrodden? If it doesn't, then we don't have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have a chance.
And Clarence Page, I wanted to bring you in on that point.
Which one? Several good points were made. Well, okay, how about that point about skin color? Maybe we've spent too much time on this program talking about black as in skin tone, because the caller is right and Bobby Rush is right. African-American voters care about what's your agenda, what's your program. Maybe I wasn't being fair to Al Sharpton, making it sound like it's just New York jealousy, because he too has said, what is Barack Obama's agenda? He wants to see an urban agenda. And that Tavis Smiley conference down in Virginia last weekend, it is true. And Cornel West raised the point, too, again, pointing out that he loves a Barack, but he, too, wants to know what's the agenda. One thing about the Obama strategy right now has been it's been focused heavily on outreach. So he's been talking about Iraq, which is the premier issue for everybody in America right now. He has not gone into a lot of specifics on how he feels about school funding, affirmative action, those hot button issues. So we're going to have to see.
Sir, thanks very much for the call. We're going to take a couple of more of your questions on this subject when we come back from a short break. Our guests are Clarence Page of the Chicago Tribune, Deborah Dickerson of Salon Magazine. We'll also be joined by our political junkie, our guest political junkie, Mara Liasson. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're talking with Clarence Page of the Chicago Tribune and Deborah Dickerson of Salon.com about the controversy, or is it, about Barack Obama, who is or is not an African-American. He's, of course, the son of an African and an American, yet some are questioning whether that makes him African-American. And this is all reflected in some reluctance by some of the traditional powers in black politics to readily endorse his campaign, and public opinion polls that show he does not enjoy as much support amongst black voters at this stage in the race, it's very early, as does Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. Clarence Page, Deborah, let me ask you to talk about this. Where is this going?
Well, I think Barack's campaign is taking us into a national conversation that we haven't had in years. Race relations have kind of been pushed to the back burner in the post-9/11 era. It shouldn't be. Questions of diversity in this country still ring out through issues like immigration and others. And I think that's what you're going to see here with the Obama campaign. We're seeing this already. Why is it that white Americans in particular, that I've seen, have been so eager to find Colin Powell or Barack Obama a black candidate who they can support? I think in many ways it says something very positive about how Americans want to think about their country, and so that it has actually become a plus in this era to be a black candidate who is acceptable to whites, as opposed to being a confrontational black candidate like Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton and some others who have run in the past.
Deborah Dickerson?
What I hope to see is the emergence from the shadows of non-African slave descendant, you know, blacks from the diaspora. You read about all these the burgeoning of African immigration and West Indian immigration in the New York metropolitan area, Haitians and folks from Central America in the Florida area. You know, as a black person, I don't want to give up power, but the intellectual in me wants to know who these folks are and what they bring to the table. And, you know, I think their politics have been stifled by ours, and I'm sure there's a ton of convergence, but there has to be some marginal differences. When we talked about Barack Obama being free of the past, I think these folks are free in whatever they suffered in their own countries, and of course slavery was much worse in the West Indies, they're free of this specific baggage, and I have to believe that they're going to spice things up, they're going to make things more difficult. We're going to have to give up political hegemony of the race question, but I'm hoping to see that, I'm hoping that Barack Obama represents the leading edge of the wedge, bringing some new and much younger blood into black political leadership and the punditry channels. Who's the big West Indian pundit? Who's the big what are the Haitians doing politically? So I'm hoping that we're going to take the lid off what blackness means.
And Stephen Colbert was having fun with you on his show the other night, but you were sort of caught in the semantic trap of coming up with a new word, African, right? African-Americans or whatever it is.
I don't know, but you know what? I get all these emails, and they really are vicious, and people want to say, we shouldn't single them out, but they always go on to say, my father was from Ghana, I'm from the West Indies. If it doesn't matter, why'd you bring it up?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what I just think the term blackness will probably stay the same, but you just have to not think you know what that means. If you know somebody's black, you shouldn't be able to know exactly what that means.
Here's an email, in fact, we got from a Ghanaian from West Africa. I believe I cannot claim blackness as in African-American, because being African-American is a way of life one has to be born into. At school and everywhere, I am treated differently from African-Americans. That's why I believe Obama is black, but not as African-American as people would want him to be. And I guess, Clarence Page, that represents political pluses and political minuses for Senator Obama.
Well, you know what's happening here. We're getting away from the notion that all black people are alike. We never were, but many in the era of segregation, we were forced to be concentrated physically and politically and sociologically. Today, our own diversity is showing through here and there, and African Americans are as surprised as anybody else to see it all around. I have written that we need to look more at the diversity within our own community. As Deborah Dickerson mentioned about the high percentage of African and West Indian immigrants and their offspring at Harvard and other universities. I've been doing my own informal surveys, and I just talked to an Education Week reporter this week. They're coming out with a new study that's just been done. We need to do more studies as to why is it that our native-born slave-descended students are not doing as well as black immigrant students. Mm-hmm. I think we have a lot to learn from our immigrant brothers. I know I have learned so much already just from families who my family is associated with. These are things that we in the black community really need to have more of a discussion about.
Clarence Page, thanks very much for coming in. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Neil.
Clarence Page, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Deborah Dickerson, hope you have a good time dealing with all the snow there in Albany, New York.
Thank you so much.
Deborah Dickerson has been distracted from the white stuff outside her window by speaking with us today on the line. She's a columnist for Salon.com and author of the book The End of Blackness. When we come back, the political junkie.